Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 156. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, sir?
I'm feeling great, Pete. I feel like I have just the right amount of coffee in my veins. Like, it's just hitting. I'm ready to get the day started.
So what is the right amount of coffee for you?
About a cup and a half. If I get a little more than that, like within 30 minutes, I get kind of jittery. So,
Regular coffee or espresso? What is your poison?
Regular, straight black, no milk, no cream, no sugar, nothing. Like I try to avoid.
Oh wow, just
like
a cup of Joe, huh?
Flavored. Yeah, no. I mean, I've been drinking coffee since like fourth grade or something. And you know, I started with like, you know, the sweet stuff and, you know, all the fancy stuff. But no, just I did enough consulting at like industrial sites and chemical plants where you were just drinking sludge that I'm pretty sure I destroyed all taste buds that, you know, I'm not Pete Keeler here. I'm not like a coffee snob. I'm like, okay, is it black? Does it have caffeine? Like, yeah, I'll drink it.
All right. So is it fair to say that you're coffeed up and ready?
I am coffeed up and ready. Let's rock.
Good, man. I'm glad you are because this is definitely one I'm excited about. And before we talk too much about it, I want to bring on our guest host, which is our good friend, Mr. William Lamb. William, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Always good to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for joining. We love having you as a guest, but I thought this would be a good one to have you as a guest host on since you've been pretty active in this community at VMware. And so I'll give you a little hint of what we're talking about today. John, you remember that song?
I can't imagine Steve Jobs ever approved that ad.
I remember that song. That was many, many moons ago. But I agree with that because I do love my Mac. I do a lot of
which decade was this?
Oh my goodness!
Song doesn't ring a bell.
Well, let's just say this: the video for that, they were holding colorful Mac laptops that looked hilarious.
I remember those. I remember those in elementary school.
Yeah. But that's the thing, man. I have nothing against Windows. I think Windows is great. There's a place for it in the enterprise. There's things. I'm not a Windows hater, but I'm definitely a Mac guy. I mean, I love it for all the things I do. I mean, there was a time when I hated it for certain Office products, but certainly as an end user, Mac for me is the way to go.
Yeah, I use it on a daily basis. And in fact, a lot of the tooling around the ecosystem has just gone really, really well. No real complaints and just having it out of the box with a lot of the default things that I rely on, like a terminal and access to certain toolings has certainly been very useful.
Yeah.
Homebrew definitely like changed my life. Like just the ability to have an actual package manager.
Yeah, for sure. And so today I want to talk a little bit about Mac in the enterprise. I mean, that's a wide topic. And William, I thought you'd be great for this. But I also thought it would be cool to bring on an actual customer, a VMware customer. And so today we're bringing on from Mac Stadium, Preston Leshibikin. Preston, how you doing, man?
Not bad. How are you?
Doing well. So why don't we do a little intro? So Preston, you work at Mac Stadium. Tell us, what exactly is that?
Mac Stadium is the largest Apple infrastructure as a service company in the world right now. So essentially there was a big gap. People had a use and a need for having Apple hardware in a data center, and no one was really doing it at that point in time. So Mac Stadium kind of stepped in, initially starting with minis, moving on to Mac Pros. And the next logical step for a hypervisor for virtualization was VMware. They were the only one who had the capability of actually running Mac OS on the hypervisor.
And so for those that are not aware, what are some of the, you know, what is the demand? Like, why can't we just do this on a Windows server?
The one thing that a lot of people sometimes never realize that, you know, there's a large swath of people in the globe who utilize Apple hardware, iOS, you know, your iPad, your iPhone. The developers who make that, before they can submit to the Apple store, the actual, all of this has to be done on Apple hardware only. It's not something like Android that in the opposite direction could be built on top of anything. you know, anything that can run Linux. So Apple has to be on Apple. They keep a tight lock on their ecosystem to be able to control quality. And this is just one of those, you know, things that leads you down that path.
And so from that perspective, what people are running are build tools. So like Xcode and building like CI/CD pipelines to build out there. Because it's not just, I guess, OS X applications. It's probably a lot of iOS, I guess, is driving that.
Yeah, so there's a high amount of iOS development that's being done on it. What led into VMware was then there was no real defined structure out there on, well, what do I use to automate this kind of thing? How do I automate this platform? How do I create that CI/CD pipeline instead of, you know, most people just have a bunch of Mac minis or Mac Pros sitting in a hardware closet in their office or on their desk or under the table kind of thing.
Well, and I did some consulting for a Mac developer, which actually, oddly enough, the NDA was tighter than like working on DoD systems. It was absurd. But what was impressive to me was how much regression testing you need to do when you're in the ecosystem, because if you want to make sure the app works on the last release of iOS or, you know, multiple sub-releases, or in their case with GPUs, different hardware, like it gets kind of crazy. And so being able to burst and farm that out or have someone else manage that zoo of hardware you need is pretty handy.
Yeah, no, exactly. And speaking of that, I mean, you mentioned the regression testing. As I'm sure people are aware, there is a lot of quality control when it comes to iOS apps, even from what is allowed to be submitted, where Apple will scrutinize a lot of things. So you get to a point where, all right, you miss up or you have one issue where the latest version of iOS works and one version behind it does not.
Yeah.
You can be easily shunned within the community as that is a terrible app. We're never using that again. You're out in the cold. So
it's a finicky culture, my friend. I mean, man, people, there's no forgiveness. If this thing doesn't work, it's gone. I'll never go back.
Right. And for a lot of customers, it's also differentiation, right? The way I kind of look at it and kind of person spot on this is that if you look at, you know, for anybody who owns an iPhone or a Mac device, right? Any of the applications that you see and use on a regular basis, more than likely, they fall in one of two camps, right? They're either trying to run this themselves in their own data center. Generally, it's not an expertise that a lot of our customers have experience with. Or the alternative is to leverage somebody like Mac Stadium, right? Provides basically infrastructure as a service, but in this very specific vertical around supporting Mac hardware and leveraging VMware vSphere. If you think about the benefits to our customers is that, you know, not only can they do general development, but it's this continuous CI/CD build infrastructure where you can quickly test across multiple versions of browser compatibility, continuous builds, right? Development farms. And so it's a real set of use cases powering, you know, many of the applications you're using today. And a lot of people forget, in fact, even VMware has the exact same use case. We ourselves are shipping a number of different applications like VMware Fusion Horizon that run on Mac, right? And so we ourselves have the exact same challenge of like, well, how do we ensure that we provide not only a secure environment, but a highly reliable environment to actually build, test this with the rest of the infrastructure? So it's great for general development on a laptop. But once you're really talking about enterprise scale, and it's not even just the larger enterprise, even some of the big startups I've worked with in the past, you know, they have the same exact requirement. And so a lot of people kind of misconceive of like, why would you run vSphere on a Mac system? You know, it's really, there's a business driver behind it.
Well, it's the same reason like internally within R&D, if I need to test a new build, I don't go, okay, check out from the tree. Okay, let me go find a compiled binary set, go manually install this on bare metal. Like that would take me days to do that versus I go to our private cloud system where there's a petabyte of RAM and go say, I want this build, make it so. And the CI/CD, you know, the tooling deploys it. And then we have automated testing. And I mean, this is key if you want to make sure that, you know, when you deploy Catalina, the software actually works, is that people are able to do that testing.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, there, you know, customers generally fall in two camps. You know, I've been doing this for about 6-7 years now, kind of looking over this space. And if you think back, ages ago, like I think the last generation of Mac minis, you know, they've been out in the wild for 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
You know, it was only the last couple of years that we actually have an update of the Mac mini, but a lot of customers are still using that. And in fact, you know, I've been working really hard with the engineering teams to actually get it onto our VMware HCL, you know, because our customers have been using it for many, many years now, right? In fact, they're experts in running this infrastructure than VMware ourselves. But, you know, just given that confidence that, hey, you know, VMware's supporting them, and kind of that renewed effort that we're looking into. But some of our customers are doing it themselves. You know, they're large enough. They have that experience. You know, some of the ones that I've heard of in the past is like Capital One, Box, Dropbox, you know, even the likes of like Uber, Shopify, or Pandora. And other customers are, you know, wanting to do it rather not manage the infrastructure, like Preston mentioned, and take advantage of a service like Max Stadium, where customer can actually focus on developing their value add, that business specific detail, and leave the actual building process, the compilation, all of that detail out to somebody like Max Stadium, because they provide infrastructure using VMware and our APIs and all that. A lot of customers basically integrate their CI/CD pipeline directly to the service. And again, that is time to market for a lot of these customers of ours.
I mean, one thing I was going to think, just thinking about, you know, having run racks of servers, like if I've got a bunch of HPs, I've got ILO, if I've got Dells, I've got iDRAC, like how do you deal with out of band provisioning? Like, and I mean, there's some quirky kind of cool behaviors on the Mac. Like you can do a full OS reinstall from the BIOS to the cloud, but it's just a completely different hardware ecosystem. Like what are some of the challenges? What are some of the, I guess this question for Preston.
Like the first part that we ran into was of course how do we rack this and how do we rack it quickly? Because as you've seen, you know, it was one thing when I first came onto Mac Stadium, you had Xserve. I remember
Xserve.
Yeah. So
did those have an out of band?
Those have been gone for a while. We'd been running them for a good while simply because it was a server. I mean, it was fantastic. You know, it's a 1U Apple box fully, you know, built by Apple, and we're able to throw this in a rack. But every other device from the minis to the Mac Pro, there wasn't really a good way to get that in there. So we had to devise customized racks to be able to get these things set up. The minis we came up with, our original design was a very large density rack that it would basically hold like 480 to 500 and something minis in it.
How's the cooling on that? Like, I'd be afraid you'd get China syndrome and just burn through the floor. Like,
we'd gone through a couple of designs for it. And, you know, we'd gotten to a point where the cooling, we'd actually gotten it down. The strange thing is the older ones, we'd finally gotten it, and then the 2018 minis come in, and then that blows that completely out of the water.
Oh, they run a little hotter, and it's
higher power requirements, so then you have to redesign the rack, and we've gotten that done now, too, because cooling, of course, is a, you know, the initial tests, burn-in tests, we had a bunch of them in a rack, and realized, oh my God, once you start powering up builds, this thing is, you know, it's on fire, so...
So for anyone who thinks they want to become a hyperscaler, these are all the challenges you have to deal with. And if you want to become a hyperscaler of Max, God help you. Go trust someone else to do it.
Yeah. So, you know, your traditional server would always, you know, it's much easier to deal with because that hasn't really changed over the years. You know, you transition from standard format rack, you know, UCIs to blades, but it's built around the data center.
HP and Dell and Cisco have tooling and Lenovo to where you like, you drop the servers in, you drop the config, it tells you what the thermal density will be. It'll tell you what the cooling is.
Exactly.
Apple does not have a rack builder tool for
rack. It's not how it's designed around that. So when you get into that and you start realizing, yeah, there's a very large wall that you have to climb first to get past the simple things. So you think like, all right, well, it's easy. You've built the rack, you shove it in there, you've got a customized case. Now everything is good to go. All right, now you do your density, heat, CPU, and memory testing to see what happens. And all right, now you're running into cooling. Now you're running into power problems where you're like, oh, wow, okay, wow, I did not necessarily know what happens when your entire rack, let's say traditional data center things, even though you have redundancy, what happens when power goes out and then every device has to come back online at the same time? How much draw is that going to be? You never realize that even though, you know, people may think like, all right, a Mac Pro is a desktop powerhouse, but it is a lot of power that this device can start pulling down pretty quickly. So,
Sure. Apple tends to keep them on their feet in terms of designs and all that. I think Mac Stadium is not only the biggest hosting provider, but also a materials design, you know, cooling experts in some of these custom chassis they've got. They've also got some really cool stuff in terms of how they hook up their storage and networking via Thunderbolt, which is really not necessarily unheard of in general, but certainly unheard of in the enterprise space. And mainly because we're dealing with, you know, consumer grade devices. You kind of have to rethink both your networking and your storage strategies and all that. I don't know if you want to share some details in terms of how that's connected up in your infrastructure today.
Well, and I'd argue you're kind of ahead of the game, but in a way, using Thunderbolt because it's PCI Express.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be the foundation of some of these NVMe over Fabric storage, like things that us in the regular enterprise storage space are like talking about and is coming down the pipeline in the next couple of years. So it's interesting you call it consumer, but I would actually call it like kind of avant-garde. Like it's out there for enterprise. So it's coming, but.
Yeah. So it's one of those things when I first came on, that's the thing that I immediately wanted to try and wrap my head around was, well, how are you supposed to connect this? You know, it's a desktop device. You know, it's got 2 1-gig ports on the back of it. That's copper. That's great. But that's, you know, at that point in time, 6-8 years ago, you're already transitioning away from where 1 gig is your standard for a data center. So how do you do that? So there were a lot of providers out there like Sonnet, Atto, Boxes, this kind of thing. So we had to design around using those to provide 10 gig optics to this device. Because the idea is, how do you transition from a consumer-based device to a data center? Because our data center, if we took the Apple out of it, is still your standardized data center running, you know, VXLANs. We have top-of-rack switches that are all 10 gig, 40 gig, 100 gig optics. How do you transition a device that's not meant to fit in that puzzle piece in there? And these external device boxes gave us that ability to do that, to be able to push that throughput. Because once people start doing any of their CI/CD and their testing and their archival and heavy downloads, you start realizing you start oversubscribing these devices really quickly. So without that box and that back end and that 10 gig interface, then you're kind of dead in the water sometimes. So even simple things like the ability to figure out on the back of the Mac Pro, the bus. Well, you know, even at first, I never even realized this. Like, okay, well, you plug something in and just like a normal PC, you can oversubscribe the bus. So you have your Thunderbolt ports that would connect to the back of one of these boxes. If that 10 gig interface, you have all of them going through one singular bus, that 20 gig Thunderbolt 2 bus can be eaten up pretty quickly.
Oh, you've got to make sure you're splitting out the channels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can really get
up to 40 gig on Thunderbolt, right? With four buses or?
It's split up 20 gig per two. So on the back of the Mac Pro, they have six.
So it's 40 on the motherboard, then it's 220 coming out the two ports.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, yeah, most of the information I get around Mac and VMware comes from Virtually Ghetto. William, you've been working on a lot of Mac. I know part of that is like a side project just because you're a Mac fan, but you've also done a lot working with engineering and helping get things on the HCL, et cetera. And I read just very recently, as recently as the 28th of April, that there are some new updates as it pertains to Mac Mini.
Yeah. There's definitely been some interesting news. I mean, we don't always talk about it, you know, in terms of what's happening behind the scenes. So sometimes externally it feels like, hey, there's not a whole lot of news. VMware's not doing anything about this. I mean, if you look back 6-7 years ago when I had first been involved in this, and it's funny you talk about the Xserve, you know, when I was working at Salesforce, I was actually in the early on-site betas when we used to do that for vSphere. This was vSphere 5.0. And that's actually the first release that we started supporting Mac virtualization. Like nobody was doing it. And even today, there isn't a whole lot of folks in the space, especially when you talk about enterprise scale and all the capabilities that we bring with our platform. But at the time when they introduced it, I was just like, whoa. You know, we were building iOS and macOS applications. Like, this is going to be crazy. That weekend, Apple had just decided to sunset Xserve. And no joke, you know, my director's like, go out and purchase as many of these devices as you can, because we really needed the capability, right? Asking developers to, you know, write their code and build on their laptop just did not scale, right? And all developers needed some way to basically develop and test this. But if you look back, you know, in the early days of these systems, installing ESXi, you just had to do like, you know, 10 backflips, you know, stand on 1 foot and hope that it might boot, you know, forget about installing it.
Yeah.
And I've been really fortunate, you know, it's both a hobby, but also just kind of, I've always seen these different platforms as continually enabling our customers, whatever they may be doing, whether it's home lab purposes, learning, and a lot of this eventually translates to customers better understanding our software and being very efficient in deploying that for their customers and their business. And so I started to kind of get involved in this space, and I've been very fortunate to work with a number of really, really smart VMware engineers over the years to kind of make small incremental changes, right? Because again, at the time, this was not a supported platform. So although we supported on one particular piece of hardware, you know, we did have the Mac Minis, we did have these Mac Pros that started as a tower form factor, eventually kind of transformed into a small can or trash can kind of design. And it's gone through different evolutions, right? And but these are all consumer devices. And so getting support for them, you know, certainly wasn't going to be there primarily because these are not enterprise grade systems. And so we've been trying to make, you know, efforts to enable this as much as possible. And our, like I said, our customers have been running this in production for easily, you know, half a decade, if not more. And we've been trying to, you know, look at this from a renewed effort standpoint, because we know we have some really big customers using this at, you know, just tremendous scale. You know, unfortunately, I can't even share some of the customers, but there's quite a few out there, right? And so we've really been looking at the new platform, specifically the 2018 Mac Minis. That's been one of the most desirable platform, certainly from our friends over at Mac Stadium. But, you know, Apple does always, you know, bring some interesting challenges, constraints, you know, some of the things that we had just talked about. But it's also just general enablement, right? Is can we even install it? And one of the challenges with the latest generation of Mac systems, and this really goes to what they're looking at from a end-to-end user experience security standpoint, is that they've introduced a T2 security chip. You can kind of think of it like a secure boot mechanism. And it does a different, it does a bunch of different functionality, but it does have an effect on our OS, mainly because there are signed keys in this physical security chip. And it will not allow any other operating system to boot. And you can imagine that brings some interesting challenges from a VMware standpoint and for customers who want to take advantage of the platform.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, So we've been able to get it working, but there were some initial constraints. You know, we can boot ESXi on a USB key. The main thing that you need to do is basically disable secure boot. So it's not too terribly difficult. And I think customers do understand that, you know, the only OS that's going to be quote unquote supported on the hardware would be Mac OS X. And so if you want to do vSphere, you can certainly install it, boot it on a USB key, and life is good. The next challenges that we kind of found was that, well, because of this T2 security chip and mostly the changes in the hardware, ESXi cannot see the local NVMe device. So that prevents users from wanting to use the local SSD, generally for installation of ESXi, setting up a local VMS volume. That's normally how most of our customers consume it, to just put the builds there. So that was kind of challenge number one. Challenge number two, like Preston mentioned, and like many of our other customers, they use the Thunderbolt 3 ports to connect to their external storage and external networking, right? So this can be Fibre Channel, this can be NFS, iSCSI, any infrastructure that's just PCIe based, right? You can even pass through GPUs potentially. And again, similar challenge with the T2 chip, these devices on the other end of Thunderbolt 3 port is not detected. In fact, earlier version of ESX, it actually PSOTted. So that caused some problems there, obviously. And then actually the biggest challenge that we've had, and to me, it's kind of the main issue with some of these new T2 systems, and this affects both the Minis as well as the Mac Pros, is that you're unable to actually power on a Mac OS X VM. And as we've kind of discussed, you know, the whole premise of this is being able to virtualize Mac OS Guest, whether it's traditional OSs or iOS for development, dev, test, and build. And so we've had a set of challenges. And although there's not a lot of news that you kind of see out there, you know, our engineering teams have been working really, really hard because it is a complicated issue across different expertise and domains of areas. You know, it's taken a little bit more time. And what I was really happy to kind of share the news this week, and a lot of customers, you know, have praised and even reached out, is that we've been able to work around some of these challenges. So we just released ESXi 6.7 PO2. So this is a patch release that includes the key fix enabling us to basically power on and boot and install a Mac OS X VM. So that is like a big key win for us to be able to slowly unlock this platform. The second one, second issue that was resolved is the Thunderbolt 3 challenge. And so now with this version of the patch release, there's an ESX event setting that you need to set upon boot. We will now be able to see all the devices that you would normally see. The only thing that we've not been able to resolve yet, and I'm hoping at some point in the future, you know, this should be possible, is to be able to leverage the local SSD devices. But from most of our customers, you know, like Mac Stadium, they generally use the Thunderbolt 3 ports to connect to external storage for VMs, additional networking. And some of these new models actually come with 10 gigabit NICs. So there's plenty of capacity. And this really, to me, is kind of like the MVP release to enable our customers like Mac Stadium, like Dropbox, like Spotify, to be able to take advantage of all these new hardware platforms that are made available to really, you know, increase their density and increase some of their efficiency, because obviously these systems are quite old that we've been working with for some time now.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Preston, is that something that is appealing to Mac Stadium?
Yeah, of course. It's definitely, I've been playing around with the build recently. We've been doing a lot of internal testing. One thing we've been trying to do is, well, there are newer external devices from some of our vendors that we utilize. So we've been doing testing with that to be able to split things out. We've been changing our internal storage. Normally we've been running with 2 10 gigs, and that's for data and running fiber channel, but we've been doing a mass upgrade to do to iSCSI due to higher throughput through our top of racks. So we've been trying to make a couple of adjustments and testing, and having that there out like this now makes a huge, huge difference, where you can go directly to prod much faster when you have that ability to test these things.
Yeah.
The support from VMware on this has always been great. I know, William, you know, I've been working with you for quite a bit on this, because there's been lots of, there've been lots of challenges sometimes with getting macOS running. So for instance, one example was, I'm trying to remember the first version that had the HTML client that came out for the standalone HTML client for ESXi. We gave that because we had a lot of customers who were using Mac Minis as standalone hosts to build out, you know, some simple virtual machines to run some things like Windows Server on it while running Mac OS. And we started getting a flood of tickets come in where they were saying, hey, none of my Mac OS VMs work. Everything works other than that. My Linux VMs work, Windows VMs work perfectly fine. Huh. And what we ended up noticing was, with the HTML client, the VMX file was leaving out information for SMC. And I think, William, it was you that actually caught that and helped us push that pretty quickly. And I think the turnaround was like not even a week later, there was some sort of like a patch to ESXi that had that in there. So we didn't have to actually, you know, tell customers to edit the VMX files to get that running. So without that, you know, direct relationship with VMware and their, what you'd say, vendor internal urgency to get these things running, it would make things a lot more difficult. Like there would be a lot more on us. It's kind of like that step thing where the customer has a lot of things. They're like, I don't want to manage this. I don't want to have to deal with this. I'm not a data center. Put this on Mac Stadium. The Mac Stadium has their things. And then we, you know, we then also rely on our internal stuff, but also rely on the vendor who's making a hypervisor. Like, hey, we need your help on this. What do we do? And it's always been a very quick thing, which makes our lives easier. That way we can spend more time worrying about, okay, this data center can't burn down because these things are frying. So.
Yeah. And I also think that, you know, the Mac platform, you know, now that a lot of people understand kind of the underlying driving use case, but it's also an interesting kind of topic in around that, you know, we're doing everything we can to use our enterprise software to be able to support, you know, a piece of hardware that you normally don't see in the data center. And this is kind of a precursor to what I believe is going to start happening more and more, right? Especially when you start to look at edge and IoT, you know, those types of systems that you're going to be running, they're not going to look and smell like your traditional enterprise piece of hardware, because they're going to be used for very specific sets of use cases. So I think it's actually a good thing for us to not only wrap our heads around, you know, what does it take to enable some of these devices? And we're going to start to see some really interesting types of IO connectivity devices that you won't see in the data center. It's like, how do you support those scenarios for edge and IoT? And so I think this is also a good first step for us, actually, as we look into things like ESXi on ARM, some of the edge computing, and just the form factors altogether is going to be really critical. And kind of getting our heads under that.
Yeah, man. We get a hypervisor on everything.
Yeah.
So, Preston, you know, with this pandemic afoot, how has that changed Mac Stadium in terms of customer service? Has anything? Have you seen any changes since 2020 has been a complete, you know what?
Yeah. I would say that similarly to what I've been seeing in the news about, there's one group or one subset of, I guess, industry. Worldwide, that's been pretty much the same or floating above the water, at least, is the, you know, technical engineering. So that would include basically everybody here on this podcast. Same thing that's happened with Apple, Microsoft, and all these other guys who've been, they're like, wow, well, because people can't go into the office anymore.
Yeah.
People are heavily reliant on cloud services. So we've seen a significant uptick in requests for access to Mac in the cloud. So there's been a significant uptick on that. Definitely, there have been a significant uptick on our side from our customers, so who we're basically providing their private cloud services to, have been seeing a extreme amount of requests on their end. So there's been a large amount, hey, we need more hardware. So we've been pushing a lot of more Mac Pros, a lot more Minis into these environments for people to get that compute. you know, over the years, I started to grow with it because I'd used VMware, well, you know, ESXi and vSphere well before coming to Mac Stadium, but not until like I sat in the middle of this did I realize that inherent need for Mac in the cloud.
Yeah.
You know, some of our customers like Capital One have stated this, you know, when they were on stage with us at VMworld about how not having these devices sitting at work where I can't get to it sometimes and having it in the cloud or sitting in a data center has helped so much. It just boggled my mind. I just never even thought like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I guess that makes sense to me. You think from the perspective of, yeah, I have Blade sitting in a data center and I'm running my builds on it, or I'm doing the traditional thing. Yeah. My entire Horizon environment sits in there and I'm accessing my desktops. Sure. But Mac OS is, you know, a budding thing, especially at times like these. A lot more people are making use of their phones and their iPads at home. So that also means, in turn, that app development is going up.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more increased changes that are happening on a weekly basis. And that changes require, okay, there's more customers are coming in. Hey, I need to push more changes. We need to push out new code. We need to push back to the store, which then again hits us in the same way. We need more hardware. We need more hardware. We need more hardware. Get it going, kind of thing.
Yeah, the other cool thing too is it's not even just the build process and the integration. You know, for those that are not familiar with Mac Stadium, you know, they also provide a number of services that actually take advantage of the vSphere layer. And again, this is another differentiation, not only just it being a platform that can scale for our enterprise customers and be able to really manage this at scale, but it's also how they do some of their build processes. They're actually taking advantage of things like linked clones, and I think they're even looking at instant clones. So again, getting that benefit of the vSphere layer to enable these developers so that if I need to change, test a change across multiple versions, I can quickly get that image. It's not a full clone, right? And so they have access to the full set of APIs. So I've seen some other customers do some really cool stuff tying that into their CI/CD pipeline. Something that we see traditionally, right, for general x86 kind of builds and all that. But I also see some of the customer in this space push it to the limit because of the scale that they're operating at and some of the number of developers for some of these customers. They're literally 5,000, 6,000 plus developers, right? And you have to have a platform that not only can scale with that group, but also having the response time to getting the results back for some of these builds things. It's actually pretty interesting to see them take advantage of the vSphere layer as well.
Yeah, I've actually been able to gather a lot of data for a couple of different internal business units have asked over the time of different tickets we end up opening. For instance, you just never realize, all right, so as an enterprise, we end up using products like Usage Meter for licensing. Within that, little strange things would crop up where you take a look and see where certain customers end up having numbers that I've never seen in anything before. So within 1 month, we had one vCenter churn through 1.5 million virtual machines. Wow. Using CI/CD.
That sounds like some of our build farms. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd never seen that before. I was like, good Lord, you know, you don't see those kind of things. Or you're looking at things like Network Insight and just see the kind of traffic that's being pushed through right now. You know, pushing 8 to 10 gigs of traffic at any given time through a data center is just, you know, with Apple specifically, you know, people are doing. And, you know, it's specifically.
This is not a Netflix traffic. CDN node. This is.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, you're like, this is, all right, these are builds, but you just don't realize until you actually see that raw data going through there or what you're actually measuring, the metrics, that there's a lot of this going on, a lot of people making use of this.
One question I had was, are you guys doing anything with virtualizing GPUs yet?
We have tried. We've run into some problems with like 6.7 and trying to pass through the GPU from like the Mac Pro. One issue that arose at one point was that because the Mac Pro has, it's essentially two GPUs on either side of the card, it's being passed through as one, but there wasn't a way to cohesively on the customer side from the VM see that as that. So it could see it in the operating system, but it would never be able to make use of it. So we started using like external GPUs. We're still in testing of that. Because a lot of customers are seeing this, and I'm starting to get some trials with 7.0.
So. The external GPU could be long-term an interesting thing. I'm thinking like Bitfusion or something, to where you do network attached or fabric attached GPU type designs or something.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some interesting things in that area that's developing. Certainly the Bitfusion, but also in the set of Mac OS X use cases, there's a lot of rendering farms. I think in one of the more recent releases of Mac OS X, they had changed their, I think it's called Metal. It's kind of like their API. So that's changed as well. And an interesting part of the ecosystem is that, you know, Apple really kind of controls how you move along, right? They kind of determine when you need to have a new version of your software, what set of APIs you need to hear to. It's a really interesting ecosystem.
Oh yeah, if you don't start adapting to some of the new stuff, like you're still trying to use Cocoa or something, they're like, you're out of the App Store.
Yep.
And when people update, I updated to OS 10 to Catalina, and I always get this alert like the following apps are no longer compatible.
Right. Like, yeah. So they're really good about that, and it can
literally point a finger and shame upon these lazy devs who haven't updated.
Yeah. No, and it can literally make a break, you know, if you're just starting out, right? And so it is certainly a set of things that you have to kind of be responsible for. But in the GPU space, I think more can be interesting, especially for the new Mac Pro 2019 platform. Like I said, if you look at the evolution of this hardware, it has really been kind of consumer grade and consumer design, certainly for the aesthetics and all that. But I think, you know, Apple's starting to realize that, hey, you know, it's not just having this piece of hardware that can give you end-to-end security, consistent user experience, and all these different apps in the ecosystem. But it's also, how do you enable your ecosystem so that they can build these apps, test these apps, so that everybody has this fantastic experience? And so when you look at the Mac Pro, although it's really designed for entertainment, Hollywood, you know, music, audio, transcoding, you know, I think there's this kind of other set of customer base, right? Which is, how do I support Apple and their ecosystem, basically, right? And so I think with the new Mac Pro 2019, you know, they're trying to be a little bit more expansive in terms of what you can do with the system and not try to limit based on design. And so, you know, it's a tower system, you know, they even have a rack mount form factor. So I think that should be pretty awesome for folks that want to run this in a data center like Mac Stadium. But they also have a number of PCIe slots that you can now expand and extend. And so I think folks are going to start to get quite creative, especially now that we have the ability to run ESXi, run macOS X VMs on these platforms. And specifically with the Mac Pros, although we cannot take advantage of the local SSD that ships with the device, you can easily add in a PCIe adapter and hook up a ton of M.2s, basically. And you have a high-performance, highly reliable build system potentially, right? And so I think customers are going to get creative, and I think you'll start to see some interesting things, not only from Apple directly possibly with some of the GPUs that they're releasing, but also from the extended ecosystem. I think
so
that's
Atto and the usual players. Yeah, take
yeah, exactly. And I mean
give them a standard form factor slot.
Atto, yes. I mean even so. NVIDIA, you can take probably your standard NVIDIA devices that we support grid. You know, there may be some work that needs to be done on the ESXi part of it for Mac. I've not really looked into that. You know, this is really the first time, and the platform was just released, you know, not too long ago. But now you have this extensive capability. So I think once these systems become more generally available, hopefully we get out of this COVID situation where people can actually go back into the data center and do some of this work. I think we'll start to see some really interesting innovations and net new use cases that will be unlocked because of this particular platform, you know, because it's a lot more extensible than it's ever been in the past.
Yeah,
sure. I definitely have to agree with that, because especially if you see that transition from not the 2013, but its previous model that was a tower based, there had to be something in design that Apple had thought of that said, okay, well, you know, we thought about the 2013, and it wasn't just the thermal limitations of having it in that, you know, the trash can design, that they've gone strictly to this. And on top of that, hey, it wasn't just here's a tower here. We're also going to give you a rack mount device for it, with the intention that probably someone's going to put this in the data center again, because you have that big gap of empty space from Apple as a vendor, that there's no Xserve anymore. The Mac Pro has completely changed its design. And I mean, after doing our breakdown on the 2019 Mac Pro, I mean, this thing it's smooth and modular. Even getting it into a rack is, you know, it's changed. Like they totally seem to be understanding where people's mindsets are, and just leaving it up to us out here in, you know, the vast community to figure out, well, you do this, we'll build this hardware as, I don't know, as sexy as possible for you, and you do what you want with it.
I mean, I love that the hardware is pretty, but on the other hand, I'm like, out of band Redfish, you know, IPMI.
yeah. I mean, especially from like Mac Stadium standpoint, that's always been a pain so to speak.
I mean, can you use like AirWatch or an MDM agent to manage them? Like, I'm trying to think of how you do the bare metal out of band management on.
So we've been internally, we're working on something right now. We've been trying to get creative with it simply because there's just nothing there. And, you know, at scale, sometimes it's like, yes, you can have a lot of like data center technicians who are on hand to be able to do a lot of things like this.
Yeah.
But that can get tedious. So yes, you push it off onto Mac Stadium and do it, it's still a massive amount of work, whereas that time, effort, energy, money can be placed in other things. So we're working on some interesting things that should be coming out at some point too.
I'm imagining you guys just having like a massive like USB switch that can switch 1,000 ways and provide different namespaces or something to like adjust to boot.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna say this is also like an invitation to the extended ecosystem. I think some folks had sent me something a while back ago where there may be certain nicks that you can add to these devices, especially with the Mac Pro right now. You have the ability to add stuff to it. I think USB is an interesting route to. One of the other issues too is you wouldn't necessarily be able to net boot over these T2 devices. And so it makes management and imaging these things kind of interesting as well. So USB is certainly one way to maybe work around some of that. But maybe there might be some additional add-on cards.
I mean, back when we had FireWire, you could actually network FireWire and you could boot from FireWire. I mean, but although I guess you had to hit Command F or something. So yeah.
Yeah, that's one of
there's still bridges to cross in the Apple ecosystem. Yeah. And for now,
yeah, exactly. And then like ecosystem wise, these systems are some of the first ones that include 10 gigabit NICs, right? Which is by a company named Aquanta. I have never actually heard of them before, until they made it into these Mac system, but they're actually quite prevalent in the space. They're recently acquired by Marvell. And so not only do these 10 gig NICs exist on the iMacs, right? So these are the same devices, but they exist on the Mac Mini 2018 and 2019. And one of the cool things about this enablement is that we've actually been working with them, and they actually just had some news this week as well, where they've officially released a native driver for ESXi. So now you have not only a signed driver, but a fully functional native driver that would be fully compatible with ESXi 7.0 as well. And so again, it's looking to the ecosystem. I think this is really a place that's really ripe for innovation. And there's certainly some players in there, like mentioned today, Eidos, Sonnet, Aquanta, Marvell, but certainly there's a lot more that can be done in this space. And again, it's x86. I mean, just until maybe Apple releases an ARM platform that's been kind of rumored, but until then, certainly I think it opens the door for a lot of folks to kind of come in and help support this big ecosystem.
I just realized there's some really cost effective stuff here, particularly these RJ45s, so 10G based T's, like under $200, like for an external NIC. Like this is not super expensive. Like I remember looking at an external FC adapter or something back in the day over Thunderbolt, and it seemed kind of outrageous, but this is really cost effective.
Good stuff. So Preston, lots of great stuff that you guys are doing over there at Mac Stadium. You guys can check more out at macstadium.com. Obviously, Virtually Ghetto also has all the updates on ESXi, on Apple Mac Mini 2018 and the Mac Pro 2019. Last question for you, Preston. I happened to be stalking your Twitter page and noticed that you were a Corvette enthusiast. So what does that mean? Do you do any rebuilding or you just like to drive them?
So that's more along the lines of one, I'm considering a C8 or a C7 Z06 is what I've been looking into. I'm
considering wish you had one like I do or truly.
I've driven them. So back when I was in the military, I was stationed out in Arizona and I would travel sometimes to California and hit up Laguna Seca track. And they have track day, and I would be driving like C5, C6s at that point in time. I had a buddy who had a race modified C6, and I fell in love with them. So me personally, I was Camaro. So as soon as the C5 Camaro got out, I bought one, heavily modified that thing, threw it down to like 800 and change to the wheels. And that was the thing. So until the wife said, yeah, you need to stop that. That's not a daily driver. So. But yeah, I'm definitely interested in it. So especially now, other than right now with all the craziness that people seem to have, I see all over the TV, the car manufacturers trying to take advantage of folks. Like, yeah, this is a really awesome deal. We can give you this car for 84 months, no interest financing. I'm looking like, what? Wait, what? No, what?
I've got a Camry that's 12 years old. It goes 110 still. And actually right now, that is the speed limit in Houston. As everyone comes back to work, hopefully they get with the program. Like the speed limit minimum is now 94. If you're going less than that, the cops will shoot you, I'm pretty sure. So.
Oh, that's good stuff. All right. Well, listen, Preston, thank you so much for joining us today. William, thank you for hosting/guest hosting. Always appreciate you on the show. John, anything else before we let these guys go?
I think we covered quite a bit. We're going to have a periodic Mac ecosystem roundup, though. So let's keep in touch. And it sounds like there's a lot. Things are definitely improving a lot in the Mac world, but it sounds like there's still some more bridges to cross. So looking forward to that.
Oh, heck yeah. All right, gentlemen, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at thespeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Preston and William for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Jibber jabber.